Hey folks, Michael here with a quick pre-roll. I just wanted to let you know that Action 12 Cinema, the GM-less game that I wrote as a love letter to bad but fun action movies and the D12, has been nominated for an Innie Award under the Best Rules category. So the Innies, that's E-N-N-I-E-S, are generally considered to be the highest honor amongst RPG books and accessories, supplements, that kind of thing. They are the Oscars, the Tonys, the Emmys, whatever you want to consider the best of that category, that's what the Innies are for RPG stuff. So it is absolutely a huge honor and a big deal that Action 12 Cinema is amongst the other nominees. So the way the system works is it's an open submission policy. So I self-selected Action 12 Cinema to be considered. But then they have a selection of judges that actually goes through and reviews each submission and narrows down to, usually it's a list of five, in some cases it's a little bit longer, but the ones that they think are the best of the best for that year. And we made that cut. And that is absolutely the highest honor I could possibly imagine. Now, however, comes the voting, and that's where you come in. So beginning on July 12th and ending on July 21st, there is an open voting platform. You'll just log in with your computer or your device. You'll go to the link. I'll put the link in the show notes when it becomes active, and you can vote for any and all of the winners in each of the categories. You can only vote once per IP address, and I'm not asking you to try to find your way around that. All I'm asking is if you would please consider voting for me in my game, Action 12 Cinema, in the Best Rules category sometime during that time frame. I am going to be at the Innie Awards this year at Gen Con, and I don't expect that we will get enough votes. We're up against some really big heavy hitters, but it truly would mean the world to me if that could happen, and that would only happen if you help me. So thanks, and now on to the show.
Hi, and welcome to the RPG Academy Show and Tell. Show and Tell is a show where we like to bring on someone in the RPG space to talk about something cool they're working on. I'm Mo, and today we're talking to Sam Dunnewall, host of the Dice Exploder podcast and designer of the RPG Northfield. Just a heads up, it's summer in Los Angeles when we recorded this, where Sam lives. And we had to hear the plane noises so he wouldn't cook in his office. So beg your pardon for the background noise.
Yeah, hi, Mo. Thanks for having me. My name is Sam Dunnewald. I am a game designer, an award-winning game designer even, of a Golden Cobra a few years ago on a technicality. That was fun. I am a screenwriter. I am, maybe most relevantly to our conversation today, the host of the Dice Exploder podcast, a podcast that breaks down one tabletop RPG mechanic every week, as deep as we possibly can, a little game design show. And perhaps most importantly, for the second most importantly, I am Mo's friend. It was great to meet you on the drive up to Big Bad Con last year. We had a blast going there and coming back. That's me.
Yes. Just to be fully transparent, in the interwebs, I was connected to Sam to drive a good 6 hours, 400 miles from Los Angeles to San Francisco. And we're still talking. Things went well. tell us a little bit about your game, Northfield, too.
Oh, yeah. So Northfield is my latest game. I co-designed it with Jason Morningstar, and it is all about the Jesse James gang in 1876 attempting to rob the small town of Northfield and failing, getting their butts handed to them. This is a real thing that happened. The Northfield people shot them up, and they didn't all die, but they didn't even all get arrested, but the gang fell apart after that. And I grew up in this town of Northfield, and every year in the present, there is a small town carnival and a reenactment of this bank raid. And in the game of Northfield that we made, you play simultaneously a member of the James gang robbing the bank and the person in the present day at the 150th anniversary reenacting that character in the bank raid. And it's this little meditation on the very weird nature of this carnival and the racism around it and all the strangeness of America and the way that we have mythologized this bank raid in order to have a little Ferris wheel in a tiny little small town tourist trap. So that's Northfield. It's also only like an hour to play. It's fun.
Look at that there. We will get into all of that. First, I got a bunch of dumb questions.
Yeah, love them.
Let's start with what possessed you to get into game design?
A failure of responsibility, I guess. I started getting into game design. I mean, I think basically every DM is a game design. So like, arguably, mm-hmm, I was designing some cool stuff when I was running D&D 20 years ago, right? But For the Queen is probably the biggest answer. For the Queen is a game by Alex Roberts. It is a really simple game. You just answer questions. You're like the retinue of this queen who's on a diplomatic journey during a war. And it explores power and so forth. And the basic mechanics of the game are there's just a deck of cards. Each card has on it a question that is a provocative question about your relationship to the queen. You draw a card on your turn, you answer the question, and that's the whole thing. And then you just go around and around until the game's over. And I got to play an early playtest of this game at Gen Con 1 year. And I loved it. And it was immediately obvious that it was very easy to hack this game, to make your own version of it. You just have a deck of cards and a premise, and you write a bunch of questions about that premise, and then that's it. And that's not quite all of what it is, but that's how it felt. And so I went home from this playtest and was like, I love this game. I can't play this game because it's not out yet, but I know the format really well, so I'm going to just make my own version so I can start playing the game again immediately before it comes out. And that was really my first game that turned into a game called This Heart Within Me Burns, which is still on my itch page, sdunwald.itch.io. And then, I don't know, I really, like, for a couple of years, like, kept an opinion of, like, getting into game design sucks and is bad because it's very time consuming and then no one looks at your stuff. But then a little thing called COVID lockdown happened, and I was like, well, I want to do creative stuff, but screenwriting feels too high stakes for this very stressful time. Game design feels like a flight of fancy. I'll just do some of that. And so I designed several games during lockdown and really found a community of designers that I really loved. And that is when I really hit my stride.
Nice. And, you know, just for full transparency, I too fell into the cliche of loving For the Queen. I too published my own skin of For the Queen. Mm-hmm. Because, yeah, it is very evocative and mind-bending after playing D&D that a game could be so simple, so elegant, and so cool. While we're giving, you know, For the Queen all the love, Darrington Press has just republished it, and they say my copy is in the mail. I've got mine within arm's reach of me right now.
The new one? Yeah, the new one. Yeah. When the original game came out, I accidentally bought three copies. Maybe it was that I bought two copies and they accidentally sent them to me twice. So I had like all these extra copies of it laying around and got to distribute them to all my friends as I gradually indoctrinated them into RPGs using For the Queen. And I was excited for the same thing to happen with the new edition, but unfortunately, I procured merely the one copy that I wanted, and have yet to play it. But I'm really excited by all the new art and the new questions. It's a really cool looking update.
And you know, for folks who've never heard of this or who are slightly interested or really turned away, one of the best parts about For the Queen, which is an awesome game, has lots of best parts. But I think the very best part is how you could pull it out among some people who don't play role-playing games and introduce it to them, and they won't know what's going on. They will absolutely lean in and love it. It's a very simple premise, and you know, it's that that first try is free for the slippery slope of RPGs.
yeah, a little bit.
Awesome. We're gonna get back to Northfield, but not only did you start trying to design games, and I say trying to, in the diminutive, I tried to do that too. not that it's not a huge accomplishment for the games you've designed, but then you started Dice Exploder, which is low-key the podcast I always wanted to start, and I'm so glad you're doing it, so I don't have to.
Yeah.
But what is Dice Exploder, and why do you do that?
Yeah, so Dice Exploder is a podcast about tabletop RPG design, and that doesn't necessarily mean it is for RPG designers, although I think that is the primary audience. It's a show about understanding how these games are designed and why they work the way they do, and how you might be able to play around with that yourself. And the format of the show is one mechanic per episode. I have on a new person every episode. They bring on a mechanic that they are excited to talk about, and then we just talk for 20 minutes to 90 minutes about that mechanic. And I love this format. I love going really, really deep into the details and specific examples. I think that is one of the best ways to learn, at least for me personally. I think there's a lot of conversation around role-playing game design in the big theory level, let's make some taxonomies kind of space. And that stuff is fun, that stuff is interesting, but I find that stuff less useful than, like, how does this very specific thing work?
Mm.
And I wanted that conversation to be happening. You know, there was this podcast called The Hard Move.
Yes.
I can't remember who started it, but then Sydney Icarus continued it for a season. And The Hard Move was the same premise as Dice Exploder, but for a PBTA move every week.
Mm-hmm.
And that show was phenomenal. I learned so much from just listening to people talk about that, listening to people talk on that show about various moves and how they were put together and what that philosophy of design was all about, through the details of it. And I am still really interested in PBTA, but I also wanted that for a much wider swath of the role-playing game world. Right. Like, I wanted to also bring together all the different parts of this hobby and try to do some learning from each other on it. And I think I've mostly stayed in my story game space, but maybe we'll table that for now. But I do think that there's a lot to learn from games that aren't PBTA games also. So I wanted The Hard Move to come back, and it was over. It wasn't coming back. Mm-hmm, eventually, mm-hmm. I realized if I wanted it to come back, I'd just have to do it myself. Mm-hmm. And on top of that, I'll say also, like, Dice Exploder is named after Song Exploder, the podcast where they take one song and interview the musician behind that song and just break down how that song came to be.
Right.
And there's another show that I really love called Good One, which is basically the same premise, but for stand-up, for like one joke or routine in the stand-up space. And I really loved those shows also. Like, I just learned so much from that. Let's get into the detailed process.
Right.
And I felt like I didn't want to do another interviewing creators about their work show, because there were a lot of shows like this one, you know, out there in the tabletop RPG world, I think, kind of doing that work. And so I decided to change the formula to be a little more like have on someone and talk about a third party's work. And that way you get to, like, plug the third party and, like, stay in a little bit more like, let's analyze how the games work rather than let's talk about the process of design.
Right.
I was a little bit more interested in that and potentially bringing in people who were less interested in the process and more interested in the results. But yeah, that was the story of all the like initial choices I was making about the show and why I wanted to make it.
Well, I think you've put together a great show. Thank you for telling me where the name came from, because I always thought you started off loving Savage Worlds and their exploding dice system, and you just got lost on a tangent.
No, I've never played Savage Worlds or even read it. So yeah. Yeah. Well, I do love exploding dice, though. We did a whole episode about exploding dice, obviously. How could we not? It's one of the best episodes of the show, so I highly recommend it.
For anyone who is interested, I'm very jealous of the murderer's row of designers you've had on. You've literally had all my favorite designers on your show. And after this, now that we're still talking and we're friends, I want all of their phone numbers and emails.
Great. We'll talk. No, I will say I have really been surprised by the fact that no one in RPGs says no to the chance to talk about RPGs. Like, I think even the heavy hitters, like the industry is just small enough, like their real life can't be all RPGs all the time. So any chance that they get to talk about the thing that they love, they want to take it. Right. So everyone I've had on the show, like truly everyone from the smallest, like least well-known designer to John Harper, has been so gracious, so lovely, so excited to come on and like support me in making the show, and also to talk about whatever the thing is that they're bringing on.
Nice. All right, we have shielded the stuff, but people come to this podcast to hear about games. So let's talk about what kind of feelings people are going to get playing Northfield.
Yeah, so Northfield, as I explained before, very much a game about my hometown, and I didn't really realize until we'd started making it how much it was going to be a game about my relationship to my hometown, and sort of interrogating the town's questionable history and like the way that it has whitewashed that history and glamorized that history.
Mm-hmm.
And I knew I kind of wanted to get to those feelings, but it ended up feeling a lot more personal for me making the game. So in some ways, like, I don't even know what feelings other people are going to walk away from the game with, because the game feels so much like, I'm 8 years old again. Like, what do you want from me? I'm a tiny little baby. But I think from the people that I have talked to after playing the game with them, that people really do get this sense of, wow, these gangsters were fucking assholes. Like, why are we glamorizing them? Mm-hmm. Let's make fun of these horrible, unrepentant, racist assholes, and also the people glamorizing them in the present. Let's just kind of like dunk on all of them and have a good time doing it. And obviously there's some unsettlingness in there. There can be some like, wow, this is depressing kind of in there. But I think that there's a lot of fun taking that step to remove yourself emotionally from them and just kind of point and laugh. I think the game does a pretty good job of that.
So would you, how would you put this as a genre? Obviously, there are no dragons. I don't think there are any dungeons, but there are banks.
I think it's like, so much like For the Queen, the actual act of playing the game is answering a bunch of prompt cards about how you feel. Because we don't break with history in the big picture. In the small scale, like, anything can happen. You can narrate. I was playing the game once, and someone narrated, like, and now we all go into the bank to rob it. And I was like, well, in real life, 4 of the 6 people, like, stayed outside the, and, you know, whatever. Who cares? We're all in the bank
now. It's my game now. It's my table.
Exactly, yeah. I mean, that point of playing a role-playing game is to take some ownership over the story and invent some of those details, right? And we've certainly taken liberties with the way that we describe each of the members of the gang and each person in real life who's reenacting them. But the actual robbery plays out the way that it did in real life, i.e. a disaster. And apart from that, like, I really think the genre kind of feels like a heist. Like, it's a heist gone wrong. You know, it's the build-up to Reservoir Dogs.
Right, right.
It's a game that feels like that. But the thing that you are actually doing in the game is answering these questions about how you're feeling as that history is unfolding, much like For the Queen.
Okay.
It is... your horse just got shot out from under you and you faceplant into the fucking ground. Like, how does that feel? Who do you feel like you've let down the most?
Right.
That kind of question prompt. And so on the one hand, it's putting you into that character's headspace and asking you to examine it. But on the other hand, it is allowing you to say, like, wow, this fucking loser feels terrible. Like, let's point at him and laugh. Because this racist has failed.
It really, what you're saying kind of gives me Fargo vibes.
Yeah, there is a little bit of that. I mean, it a little bit feels like a Coen Brothers movie in real life, right? Mm. These cowboys came in and tried to rob a bank and it went absolutely terrible for them. And a bunch of them got shot up. And then the townspeople, like, the aftermath of this robbery is full of that kind of weird history from actual real life. Like, they shot a couple of the guys from the gang, and one of them, they, like, put his body in a barrel and sent it to the University of Michigan, and the scientist there who got the body kept his skeleton on display for the rest of his career. Mm-hmm. And they took one of the other guys and chopped off his ear, and, like, I've seen that ear in real life because they preserved it in the Northfield Historical Society. Like, it was weird and unsettling and uncomfortable.
Right.
And I don't remember where I was going with this, but yeah, the Coen Brothers feeling. Yeah, it totally feels that, like, we have a plan. It's going to be easy, guys, right? And then it goes terribly, and there's all these consequences and fallout from it.
Now, you had the pleasure, the luxury, the, like, so on my wish list of co-designing this with Jason Morningstar, designer of Fiasco, another game like For the Queen, that you don't have to be a role player to be able to kind of gain access to, lean in and really have fun. I hear you keep referencing the For the Queen mechanics. Is this kind of Fiasco-ish?
I think it really is more For the Queen. Like, okay. It's so heavily on rails that, like, again, the big picture history does not change.
Gotcha.
And I think For the Queen also really feels on rails, right? Like, there's a lot of ways to build out how you're feeling about things and the setting and so forth, but you're always building to that same ending question of, do you defend the queen when she's under attack? And in the same way here, this whole game is always building to, the robbery has gone terribly. How do you feel about that?
Right.
Whereas in Fiasco, things are probably going to fall apart, but, like, someone usually does pretty well for themselves. Like, who's going to die? Like, there's so many more open questions in Fiasco.
Gotcha.
So while this game might feel like it plays out a Fiasco, it's only ever playing out that one Fiasco, or actually kind of two Fiascos at the same time, because in the present day, things are also going terribly, while in the past, they're going terribly.
Gotcha.
But it's only doing those two Fiascos in tandem, whereas any individual playthrough of Fiasco might go in 100 different directions.
Right. Is this like For the Queen in that you don't start with a character?
No, you do start with characters in this. So there are the members of the James Younger gang, right? You might play as Jesse James. You might play as Cole Younger. There are various other James and Younger brothers to be had. Mm-hmm. And then we did this interesting thing where there were two Jameses in the gang, three Youngers in the gang, and then three other people. And one of the roles in the gang is, one of the roles, like, for you as a player in the game of Northfield, is to play the three other randos that were in the gang, all at once, as a single, like, you're playing three different characters all at once. Yeah, you're playing all the red shirts, exactly.
Because
of those three people, the two people who died in Northfield were both randos.
Right.
And so you're literally playing the red shirts. And I found that role is really interesting to get your hands on and sort of feel like you are an outsider already because you're like, your rules are a little bit different from everyone. But, you know, it's a cool role to play. Okay. But yeah, so all six of those roles are already predefined for you. And then in the present day, your role is also predefined of who you are in the reenactment portraying one of these people. Like if you're playing Jesse James in the past, then you're also playing the guy who's reenacting as Jesse James in the present. And those, we did things where like the family relationships in the past matched to family relationships in the present. Mm-hmm. So the three people playing the Youngers in the present are all siblings, just like the Youngers were. And the, another actually sort of feelings dimension to this game, it's a surprisingly family-oriented game just because there was so much family inside of this gang. And it's cool to be able to play around with that and like brotherly love kind of falling apart as the gang falls apart too.
Having a brother, brotherly love is sometimes very overrated. I got into some of the worst fist fights I've ever had with my brother. So that is really interesting. So you, the characters are kind of pre-generated. They show up at the table. And like, is there a GM?
No, no GM.
Okay. Yeah. So it's GM-less. And who figures out how the story moves, when the story moves?
Yeah. So it really, I'm going to just keep hitting For the Queen here. You know, For the Queen is also a GM-less game. There are actual cards. It is a card game. It has actual prompts on each of the cards. So the way it like breaks down in play is there are six players at the table. Ideally, it works fine with less than that. But let's say there's six players at the table. There were also 6 minutes in the robbery. It lasted for 6 minutes.
Gotcha.
And there are these six different roles that you're playing. And so you play out 1 minute of the robbery at a time. And for each minute of the robbery, there's a question for the group that the group kind of answers together. And then one of those six roles gets spotlighted in that minute. And so there's a question for that spotlight character specifically to answer. And you'll play out that minute of the robbery in the past. And then you'll like flash forward 150 years and play out the same minute of the robbery in the present with a also a question for everyone and a question for the same spotlight character. And those present and past questions kind of echo each other. So you'll answer them in the past and then you'll go to the present and be like, oh, we kind of already know some of the vibe of this like from the past. Do we want to push against that? Do we want to lean into that to make more of a parallel? Like, how do we want to play with it? And then much like For the Queen, when you're done answering the question, it's time to move on, and everyone can kind of feel that, and you just flip over the next pair of prompts and go from there.
Nice.
Yeah.
That, like, this is really interesting, and it sounds like a compelling approach to anybody who likes to tinker with RPGs, because you're telling me the game is only an hour.
Yep.
Which, you know, sometimes you only want to play for an hour. And sometimes you won't play tonight because you don't got 2 or 3 hours in you.
Yeah, exactly.
You're telling me that the story kind of drives itself. So if the GM doesn't make it or isn't ready, or if somebody doesn't show up for your session, you could kind of throw this in there. And
the game's like, got your back. Yeah. The real history has got your back and can drive the story for you. Yeah.
And then, you know, it sounds like it's also kind of genre tone-wise, definitely not what you're doing in your D&D Savage Worlds superhero adventure game.
yeah, exactly. I think this is a really nice dip into this sort of historical genre, but it's also, again, it's a Western, right? And it's a heist story.
Right.
And that action is all there and very fun, I think. And the other thing that I really love about it as an entry point into that kind of real world history kind of thing is, first of all, there's this present day port. Well, I think a lot of people see this problem with games based on real history where they really want to get it right. You know, it feels bad if we don't get it exactly right. Yeah. And I think this is a nice game for overcoming that feeling because it's got this contemporary half of it where you know exactly what to do. You know what a small town is like. You know what a county fair is like. Like, there's a Ferris wheel and they're selling fried chicken, right? Like, you can just go there and do your thing. And then in the past, all of these people, we make it very clear that all these people suck so much that it's not worth respecting them as historical figures. So, like, get things wrong. Like, go do whatever the hell you want because these guys fucking sucked.
Right.
And so you can really get in there and get your hands dirty, I think.
It's not as sacred as Star Wars.
Exactly. Yeah. It's not as sacred as Star Wars. Exactly. Yeah. But it's also not as sacred as, like, the Battle of Gettysburg either.
Right.
Or anything in World War II. Like, it's just one thing. If you got this one thing really wrong, first of all, you're not going to because the game leads you in the direction of what actually happened. But second of all, if you did, like, history is a little different in, like, one town in southern Minnesota. Like, who cares?
How many banks did Jesse James rob?
Yeah, a lot. Yeah.
Wow, this is really interesting. I'm currently working on a historical game, and some of the people are actually still alive.
And oh, so interesting.
I'm working really hard to delicately abstract it in such a way that if you're interested in the time period, you can engage with it, but you're not going to go in there and break anything to a degree that, like, nobody's names are on the characters. Go ahead.
It's interesting you say that because the present day portion of Northfield, like, contains a guy who was in the group I went to prom with.
Oh,
like those people are very much still alive and doing the thing. And I took, like, great pains to change the characters in the game of Northfield to be, like, much more despicable than the real life counterparts, right, and, like, not at all related to the real life counterparts. And
have they played it?
You know, they haven't yet, but I do know that some people in the town have heard of the existence of the game. So I don't know. I could get an angry email at some point, or more likely my parents could have some passive aggressive conversations with someone. You know, it's a small town. You got to keep it passive aggressive.
And you got to get groceries.
Yeah, exactly. But I really feel the thing that you're talking about with, okay, I want to, like, make a game about this subject, but I also want to do right by the people who are still alive, who this is sort of about.
Yeah. Right. Right. I literally just ran into a son of one of the guys in my game. And, you know, it's not developed enough to really start that conversation, like, about how his dad was, like, this, like, really, like, obscure but significant historical figure. Totally one of my heroes, but, like, you know, in this game, I'm really trying to, like, create inputs to get you to the place.
Yeah. Wow. Totally.
Awesome. Awesome. This is so intriguing. And the fact that you got to make it with Jason Morningstar is, like, so awesome. Good for you.
Yeah. I mean, I loved working with Jason. Jason's a good friend. He's also just a guy, you know? He's just a guy. Like, everyone I've talked to about this game has been like, wow, working with Jason Morningstar.
That's,
and, like,
where I'm at.
it did kind of feel that way to some extent, right? Like, Fiasco's the thing that taught me there are games other than D&D that are fun. And means a lot to me. I think Jason's work is really great. I think he's a really, really fabulous artist. And also, he's a weird little guy. And, you know, like, I've had the pleasure of him being around the Dice Exploder community Discord over the past year. And he's just there and he's hanging out and he's got opinions like everyone else. And I like a lot of his opinions. And, you know, sometimes he says the odd thing where I'm like, oh, that's a cool take. And
I guess you're human.
Yeah, exactly. And you know, I love playing with Jason. I really, really loved working with Jason, but it was just like collaborating with a friend, and that's really cool. I'm good. Lucky to have cool friends.
Good for you. I've seen him at a couple of conventions and definitely made my way to the other wall to observe him from afar until I felt worthy. So
you should just go say hi. I think
in theory that's a great idea.
Listen, if anyone sees me at a convention and wants to come say hi and tell me that my work is great, that's why I'm doing it, you know? Like that I think it feels good for everyone to hear I love your work. Yeah. And then to have a little conversation, you know. Maybe once you're George Clooney, it stops being as fun, but I think for people in our tiny little scene, It is nice to just meet people and hear from people whose work who were affected by your work and loved it.
Well, unfortunately, it's that moment where I have to tell you, I've been affected by Dice Exploder. You do a great job, Sam.
Thank you.
And I look forward to playing this game.
Dice Exploder nominated for an Annie Award. Go vote for it now.
What? Woo! Hot off the presses. So, Brass Tacks, if anybody is really interested in Northfield, are there any APs or anything out there in the world?
No, nothing like that. I mean, if you're really interested in it, I think you should just go buy the game and give it a read over. It's one of those games, I think, where you'll get a lot of the experience just by reading it, and There will be surprises then when you sit down at the table and do it. But I think that is the best way to engage with it, is to just get in there and check it out. If you are interested in hearing me get into a lot more of the nitty-gritty of how it came to be, Jason Morningstar and I did a designer commentary episode on Dice Exploder, which was very good, and I'm really proud of how it came out. And we also talked a little bit more about it in Northfield was first released on the Bully Pulpit Games Patreon. That's Jason's company that he co-owns with Steve Sagetti, as far as I'm aware. And the Patreon had the Month of Sam featuring me, where we put out this game Northfield, but also Jason interviewed me in text, and there were a couple other little odds and ends from us about the process behind the game. So you can the real Northfield heads know, you can go there for a little bit of extra info also.
Nice. And are there websites where people can find you and your work, your games?
Yeah. So the best place to find all things me in the RPG world is DiceExploder.com, where number one, you can find a link to the Backer Kit campaign for the next season of Dice Exploder that is happening right now. You can also find a link there probably to the premiere episode of Dice Exploder, season 4, which is about For the Queen, actually, featuring our mutual friend, Kimmy Hughes. And also, Dice Exploder, as I mentioned, is nominated for an Annie. You can go vote for it in the Annies. That would be a great thing that you could do on my behalf. And then that's kind of it. I don't know if you want me to be your podcast editor. You can go to samdunwall.com and get in touch with me that way, too. And that's me.
And you got so many things to talk about. What about the games?
Oh, the games. There will definitely be links on DiceExploder.com to my Itch game, to my Itch page. I should make an Itch game. That sounds fun. But sdunwall.itch.io is where all my games are at, including Northfield.
There we go. I don't know if it comes off too easy, but I love talking to you, Sam. You're such a cool, interesting person. Wishing you the very best, and thanks for coming on the show.
Yeah, thanks so much, Mo. It's always a pleasure to talk with you, too.
Thanks for listening to the RPG Academy podcast. We do this show out of love for the hobby and the desire to be ambassadors, welcoming more people into this community. All of our website content will always be free to use and utilize. But there are expenses related to the show, and if you enjoy what we do here, then please consider supporting us in some way. You can do so as simply as rating or reviewing us on iTunes or your podcatcher of choice. If you're going to purchase anything through Amazon or DriveThruRPG, consider using our affiliate links first, and then we'll get a small percentage sent back to us. You can do a single direct donation through PayPal using the paypal.me/theRPGAcademy, or consider joining our Patreon campaign at patreon.com/theRPGAcademy.
And for a donation as low as $1 a month, you'll get access to lots of extra goodies, including bonus minisodes, invites to monthly one-shot games, one-sheet adventures, and more. Please consider following us on Twitter and Facebook, or join our Discord, where we like to try to keep the conversation going with our fans as best we can, and are always looking to talk and chat more. Or do none of that. Just continue to listen and enjoy our show. Because honestly, that's enough. Thanks. And remember, if you're having fun, you're doing it right. We'll see you next time. The music used for our intro and outro is Fly a Kite by Spectacular Sound Productions, used under the Creative Commons Attribution Share Alike license.